The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, Mia. Hey, Leah. How
Hi.
You doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
You went to
yeah,
the
I listened to the podcast.
I speak with Keith just hours after the first two episodes drop.
You know how it's going to end. But even though I also know, where it's going, I'm still sitting on the edge of my seat or the edge of the toilet. Who knows whether or not it's going to make a difference in terms of the outcome of my own personal individual situation. But what you are doing by excavating, going back in and digging through the debris that was left behind and bringing that to surface, you robbing people of the excuse to say that we didn't know. But at the same time, you're going into some real dark place, and I was there. And my heart beating real fast as we going through the music. It's real. It's spooky, man. You know what I mean? I mean, it is. It's really something. And, of course, I don't like hearing about my former self in the light. You know, I'm ashamed. Stood there, watched this man, I was 23, though. That was 30 years ago. I was 23 years old and, just froze.
Keith is referring to watching the murder of Dennis Weaver in that K-block cell.
It's hard to see yourself, but it happened. It's real. It's real. And, as I said at the outset, as long as you ask the truth, you and I, we're not going to have any problems. I still feel that. And so I'm just waiting on the next episode.
I'm Leah Rothman. This is The Real Killer. Episode 11, I Hear the Fire Trucks Coming.
When is the next episode coming out?
Next Thursday.
Oh, every Thursday, huh? You got to wait a whole week? That's crazy.
Not long after this conversation in February 2023, things in Keith's world take a major turn. He goes on a hunger strike to protest some rights which he says had been stripped from him and to get ahead of it before even more are taken away. As we know by now, this isn't Keith's first hunger strike.
I was on hunger strike this time for, 8 or 9 days. And it's a grueling process, especially as a 53-year-old. One of the things that I was protesting also but the fact that I was being harassed in the visiting room. My campaign has elevated somewhat over the past couple of years in that, we are receiving more publicity. There's more things happening, bringing more scrutiny to the Lucasville prosecutions. And there's been, aggravation, obviously, from the state about that. And it's just been a constant
low-grade antagonisms, as I call them, like death by a thousand cuts, all meant to kind of, you know, lure you into overreacting. And then, you know, they can take the phone from you. They can take the business, and all those things directly affect my participation in my campaign. Yeah, after The Real Killer came out on the 16th of February, I went on a visit on the 17th. When I came back, my cell had been ransacked. And that was really the kind of the straw for me.
A few days into the hunger strike, Keith is put into solitary confinement, also known as the hole.
You know, the thing that I found most, like, surprising about the whole thing, so I hadn't been in the hole in over a decade or so, and so I hadn't been exposed to the average prisoners down here, the young guys, the guys who haven't yet acquired the resources, mental, emotional, financial, to really navigate this difficult situation. And I had been away from that type of struggle for a long time. I've been here for 25 years, so of course I have adjusted. You know, I went into this cell, and it was writing graffiti all on the walls. You know, guys that are on different degrees of distress writing SOS messages out on the wall. The mirror was scratched out. These guys, they smoking this drug called Toon. Apparently, some toilet paper or paper with some roach spray on it. And these kids, all they talk about is masturbating. You know, I'm 53 years old. I'm sitting back and I'm listening to all this weird ass shit. You know, they were talking about hours, man. They just talking about their penises. You know what I mean? But that's a reduction. That's how you've been reduced to. You know what I mean? You know, my first day in the hole, I stood at my door for 2 hours talking to young guys about how to equip themselves, about different books I've read that helped me along the way. I think I was back in the hole for like 5 or 6 days, and then they moved me down to the infirmary, which is like the, you know, opposite end of the spectrum in terms of, you know, the noise and craziness of the hole, the chaos of the hole. The infirmary was just this real serene. The walls were painted white, no graffiti, real antiseptic, you know, bed in the middle of the room. And so I was able then to kind of reflect on what I had just went through.
It's there Keith listens to episode 4, and he has a big reaction to what he heard Judge Crow say. Here's a clip from that episode.
Did you, in your years of being a judge, have a certain reputation?
Yeah, I kind of did. I actually had a song written about me. I should have looked it up and got to play it for you. Hanging Judge Crow. That was the song, and that was a reputation among most of the attorneys. They knew I was a strong advocate for law enforcement.
Hanging Judge Crow, like hanging people, or what did they
mean? Yeah, it was a comedy type song, friend of mine wrote.
It was interesting hearing Judge Crow speak so openly and candidly about his reputation as a lynching judge or a hanging judge. It's like he didn't really have any awareness of what he was saying. Here we are really talking about a case that was, you know, steeped in racism and all white jury. I'm the only black person in, and he, you know, taking pride in being, you know, the lynching judge. And what I'm saying that, you know, I didn't receive a fair trial. There was no way I can receive a fair trial with the team that they assembled. I'm talking about the judge, the prosecutor, not just in my case, but, you know, in other guys' cases. And that's the problem with the system. It's not the Constitution. It's not the statutes. All those things, if applied properly, I think you can get close to what justice really is. It's human beings that prevent that process from happening. You know, when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, all those people was, you know, so up in arms about it. Those are very, very people who sit on juries who, you know, don't require any evidence to sentence somebody to death. So it's not that the system itself is broken. I'm talking about the Constitution and how it was written. That was an ideal, though. You know, ideals are just abstractions until human beings actually do the thing that they say that they carry through. I think Seth Tiger and all of them, not just with my case, but with all the cases that are now coming back to bear, will say something about their collective legacy what they did over the past three decades of running the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office. You know, I think their legacy will be one of racism towards black men in particular and putting people on death row. You know, I think that would be the legacy of the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office.
I had hoped the prosecutors in Keith's case, Seth Teeger, Bill Anderson, and Special Prosecutor Mark Pietmeyer, would have agreed at some point to speak with me, but they never did. They weren't the only ones. Keith's federal defenders, who have been representing him for the last several years, were helpful by providing me some documents and answering some questions via email and over the phone. But in terms of sitting down for an interview, no, it never happened. And I'm sure they're busy. It's no secret that public defenders are overworked with heavy caseloads. But still, it's strange. In fact, it's the first time in all of my years dealing with something like this. I mean, attorneys usually jump at the chance to defend their client. From time to time, I would ask Keith about it, and naturally he'd get angry. He suspected they didn't want to be interviewed because they weren't actually doing anything on the case, and admitting that out loud might not look great for them. It's something he's actually called them out on in the past.
And I said, I think you're running down my time. This is 4 years out, 4 years ago. I said, now, I don't blame you for doing that. But I want you to know how I feel about it. I feel like this is a legal lynching that I'm undergoing, and that you are just as responsible for putting a noose around my neck as the people who intend to hang me from a tree.
As of early 2023, there is nothing officially happening in Keith's case, and his execution date is just 7 months away. Back in 2015, the Sixth Circuit upheld the lower court's decision keeping Keith's conviction and death sentence in place. In April of 2016, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear Keith's case. In 2017 and 2018, motions for relief were filed, but all were denied. Then, in December of 2018, Keith's execution date was set. By the way, it was Special Prosecutor Mark Pietmeyer who asked the court to set the date. Fast forward to March of 2020, and the world comes to a screeching halt. COVID-19 hits, we're thrust into a pandemic, and stay-at-home orders are issued. Just days into the official lockdown, Keith is interviewed by Mother Jones, where he shares some tips on how to survive in isolation after his, at that point, 27 years of living in solitary confinement. The article gets the attention of many, which causes a chain reaction, resulting in a lot of new support for Keith.
I'm Brian Jackson. I am a musician. I'm one half the duo of Gil Scott-Heron and Brian Jackson. We recorded about 8 or 9 albums together in the 70s. Our focus was on consciousness, on social consciousness, and we basically tried to emulate patterns that we understood from some of our greatest influences. People like James Baldwin, people like Langston Hughes, musical heroes like John Coltrane and Billie Holiday and Miles Davis. Initially, the concept was to try and market our ideas the way Wall Street marketed burgers. You know, so to use popular music of the day, which was our music, which was black music, to market, instead of burgers, to market revolutionary thought.
After Brian's wife reads the Mother Jones article, she gets Keith's book, Condemned, and tells Brian he must read it. But Brian's not ready. The country's in turmoil, and it's not just because of the pandemic. NBC Nightly News reports.
In Minneapolis tonight, tensions are high as 4 police officers have been fired after a man was pinned to the ground and died. The incident was caught on camera.
May 25th, 2020. George Floyd is murdered by Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, and people have taken to the streets in protest about yet another unarmed Black man killed by police.
I felt like just overwhelmed by everything. And I said, I'm going to read it, but I need some time. And she said, no, you have to read this now. 24 hours later, I put the book on the table and I looked at her and I said, we have to do something.
When Brian and Keith finally speak, their connection is undeniable. And it's not just their shared love of jazz that solidifies it.
He and I hit it off like immediately, like as though we had been best friends for 20 years already. It was almost as if we had some bond that was just waiting to be recognized.
Brian decides he wants to do a podcast, and he wants Keith to be his co-host.
Hi, I'm Brian Jackson. This podcast is about music, justice, and everything in between. This is Pieces of a Man. But thank you, Keith, and I just want to say how happy I am that we finally got this podcast off the ground.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, brother. Happy to have you here to help me co-host this first episode of Pieces of a Man.
Likewise.
So why don't we get right on into it?
What are some of the topics that you discuss?
I think one of my favorite episodes has to do with agency. And it's because it's something that we all wrestle with in this time period, in this where we are right now in our history. And we've come to depend on so many agents to do the things that we once had to do for ourselves. You know, we've allowed the media to tell us how to think about something. Worse, to tell us how to feel about things. We allow people to decide what we will eat. We allow corporations to tell us what we should how we should communicate. We really have given the majority of our free will over to others. And so when we get in trouble or when we are unhappy, we expect someone to come along and fix that. And in reality, no one's going to come and fix that. No one's going to come and tell you how to find fulfillment in your life. And I think this is Keith being in the situation that he was in, and having no one there to do anything on his behalf. You know, I think he got to the realization that it was something that he had to do himself. And first of all, you have to decide. And one of the biggest decisions that he made was, I want to be able to touch my family. I want to be able to touch the people I love. I want to be able to give them hugs and kisses. You know, I want to be able to hold their hands. And this is something that the prison system was not allowing him to do. And he protested, he petitioned, he did everything that he possibly could. And none of those things had worked. And finally, he decided that he would go on a hunger strike. And within 12 days, the decision was made to allow the inmates to have contact, you know, to have full contact visits with their family members. Something that had taken years was never accomplished. And he decided, well, I'm going to take this last step. I'm going to go this extra mile. And he was successful. And from that, we learned that when you take things upon yourself, when you take your happiness and your fulfillment in life upon yourself, you know, that it's the best thing that you can do. Keith is a well-read man. He's spent most of that time in prison reading. There are probably few degreed individuals out here in the world who have studied as much as he has. He's used his time wisely. And it was a decision. It was a conscious decision on his part to do so. He's filled his life with knowledge and beauty through music and poetry and art. He's done everything he can to make his existence worthwhile, no matter where that existence happens to be physically located. And I admire him for that, you know. He also has a wicked sense of humor. He's one of the funniest people that I've ever met. And again, you know, just I sit back in awe sometimes and wonder how anyone in that situation could have a sense of humor about anything. And yet, this was his decision. It was his decision that he was going to value in his life. If no one around him valued his life. Wow, sorry. Yeah. That if no one was going to put value, no one around him was going to put value in his life, that he himself would put value in his life. To me, that is the lesson that I learned from Keith.
I ask Brian why he believes in Keith's innocence.
I think sometimes innocence is the wrong word, you know, because there's innocent and there's not guilty, you know, and I feel like I don't think any of us who would have been in a situation like that are innocent. Okay? You know, because you're in jail, you know things happen, you see things that happen, you know, there's no way you can be innocent. But what you can be is not guilty, you know, and I believe that Keith is not guilty. Yeah, I don't believe that he committed any of the crimes that he was charged with. He wanted to go to trial because he was naive. He was young. He believed in the American justice system, and he was punished for that.
What are your feelings about the fact that Keith's execution date is literally less than a year away?
You know, it's hard to think that, you know, that if all else fails, that Keith will be put to death. I just, you know, I know no, none of us wants to think about that. You know, I'm optimistic, you know, but I'm also quite still rooted in the reality that there is a legal paper somewhere saying that on November 16th, 2023, you know, this act is supposed to be carried out. This is no way to handle human beings for whatever they did or for whatever you think that they did. To kill someone, that's not an acceptable form of punishment in the 21st century. We're not barbarians, or are we?
Have you allowed yourself to go there? To imagine?
I just know that if it were to happen, I would have to be there. And I cannot imagine my life after that day. I really don't know how I could live, how I could, you know, go on. We all would, you know, but not in a good way. Not in a good way. I'm kind of like getting overcome again, you know, with emotion. And it's a dire situation. It's a situation that shouldn't happen. It shouldn't have happened. And there are a lot of people who were responsible for it happening. It seems that Keith is the one paying the price for it. We just need a little time to sort it all out. I hope we get that time.
I know that you talk to Keith all the time, but if there's anything that you could say to Keith that you'd want him to know that you haven't said, or...
I would say that, you know, that I think that, Keith, I think you're one of the freest people I've ever met. You're freer than a lot of us. You're freer than the people who put you there.
Thank you.
An October morning in a quiet suburb in a town in Scotland, a man is walking his dog when suddenly shots are fired from a car. The man falls to the ground and the car speeds off. An ordinary residential area, but extraordinary things happen in ordinary places.
The instinct right away was it was a political thing.
We're talking about Russian-trained, high-ranking officer in the Secret Service.
An Assassin Comes to Town, a six-part podcast. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
So how did you first learn about Keith Lamar?
So in the apartment where I'm right now, my neighbor here was Brian Jackson.
That's Albert Marquez, pianist, composer, and activist. He's originally from Catalonia, Spain.
And during the Black Lives Matter protests, we had many conversations. And one of the ones that we had was, what if we protest before they kill somebody, not after?
I speak with Albert over Zoom.
My love for music, I mean, it's really my love for jazz and for Black American music. It just started when I was probably 11, 12 years old. And the specific element of improvisation is really what not only blew my mind, but I think helped me to approach life in general. I just loved it as an attitude towards being on this planet.
For the last 6 years, Albert has been teaching music at a New York City public middle and high school called the Institute for Collaborative Education.
It was created by a social worker around 25 years ago. We basically use music as a tool to help people who are in difficult situations.
When you first started talking with Keith, what did he say about his case?
Let me say, before I answer that I'm against death penalty in all cases, even when people are guilty. I'm against solitary confinement in all cases, even when people are guilty. Both are a form of torture. I think the UN says that more than, I think it's 27 days in solitary confinement will cause irreparable brain damage. So he has been there 28 years. About his case, Keith was a great candidate to be blamed, because who would care about a Black kid from Cleveland that had no support, that was already there for murder? Who would defend him? Who was going to show up to denounce what they were doing to him? It was a great target. That's what I think that happened.
Motivated to do something to help, Albert gets an idea, a benefit concert for Keith.
And then it all started with a protest on August 2020 at Grand Army Plaza in the middle of Brooklyn without permits of any kind. 25 musicians, I convinced them to play for free. with a lot of support from a lot of people that helped us to make it happen. And then we played for 3 hours in the middle of all the protests. So that's really how it started.
And Albert doesn't stop there.
So I tried to take that slogan, Amplify Black Voices, as literally as possible.
He wants people to hear from Keith directly.
And what we do is that through phone calls, we provide the stage, the microphone for him to explain by himself, in his own words, what has happened and what is happening to him.
Here is a clip from the very first concert Albert and Keith played together.
Laugh. Breathe deep and have the courage to dream about beautiful days in different ways.
From there, Albert decides to attempt the impossible, to make an album with Keith and 19 musicians. Despite their many obvious challenges, in 2022, the album Freedom First, named after the concert series, is released. Here's a short clip from their song, Be Free.
This is how it all began. And confused. Pain. A spark turned to a flame. 10 people died. Lost their lives. Somebody had to be blamed. Even though it could never be explained how after 22,000 pieces of evidence was collected, none of it could be connected to a crime. This is what blows the mind. The phony, uncorroborated testimony.
This is the first album in history made by somebody in death row. The album has Brian Jackson, who made some of the most important albums in music history, mixing spoken word and jazz. We have my mentor, Arturo Ferrell, who has, 7-8 Grammys, a Latin jazz legend that has helped me a lot. So many great people. I mean, there aren't that many politicized jazz musicians. So almost all of them are there.
What do you want people to know about Keith?
Basically, a lot of people ask me to convince them about his innocence. I'm not going to do that.
He's not perfect. He made mistakes. Listen to Keith. Listen to his own story. Because we can only kill people when they are dehumanized, when they are numbers, when they are criminals, when they are monsters. If they make albums, if they talk about their families and love and pain and making mistakes in life, when we humanize them and we see them as 3D human beings, suddenly we cannot just execute them, make them disappear forever without feeling anything.
About a year after Albert and Brian Jackson begin their friendship with Keith, someone from Keith's past comes back into his life.
I'm Desmond Howard.
Desmond Howard, 1991 Heisman Trophy winner and MVP of Super Bowl 31. Today, he's a football analyst for ESPN. I speak with Desmond over Zoom.
Keith was one of those players who, as a young man, he just had like this energy about him, smiling, joking.
Back in fifth grade, Desmond is the new kid on Keith's St. Tim's Pee Wee football team.
Keith was a quarterback. He had these long limbs, but he can run. He was very athletic. And we were kids, but because I play so much football now, when I look back on it, he was a real positive leader. He wasn't a guy who was going to like get on you for no reason. If a guy drops a ball or maybe fumbles a ball, he's not going to go up to a guy and make him feel worse about it. He's the guy who's going to go up there and try to pick you up and like, hey, let's just get ready for the next play. So that's kind of like was his approach. That's what I remember about Keith.
How long did you and Keith play together?
So Keith and I played together for a few years. Even after we lost contact, he's a guy who somehow, one way or another, would come across my mind, you know. And ironically, coincidentally, he actually became really good friends with another good friend of mine who I grew up with, who lived in my same neighborhood, named Kenneth Wright.
You met Ken Wright in episode 5. Remember, he's the friend Keith jokingly referred to as his best friend. Best dressed, most intelligent.
Could you ever have imagined that he would end up in prison?
So I would say that because of the environment that we all came from, it was not far-fetched for me to think that anybody, or at least that most of the people who I came in contact with, whether it was playing baseball, football, or basketball, if you were from the inner city like we all were, was caught up in some sort of bad situation and ended up spending some time in prison, because that was the path that a lot of the young Black males that I knew, they were on that path, whether they were on the path to either go to jail or you would hear that they were murdered. Unfortunately, that's just the reality of the environment that we came from, yeah. You know, and it's crazy to say it, but I could have been caught up in some shit, you know. I don't know how I got out of those situations. You know, I must have had someone looking over me or an angel on my shoulder that evening. But there were multiple occasions where things could have turned left, and I could have been caught up in a situation that wouldn't have ended well for either me or the other person.
It's not until many years later when Desmond hears Keith's name again. Ken tells him Keith is on death row for killing 5 people during the Lucasville uprising.
It was like, whoa, whoa, Keith Lamar? Keith that I played with at St. Tim's? He's on death row? Like, are you serious? For what? And it's just like unbelievable. It was something that I couldn't even wrap my mind around. Like, it can't be the same guy who I played Little League football with. Now, I know guys who are in prison. I've had family members in prison for doing things out, you know, the illegal things. But I've never, ever known anybody to be on death row. And so when I heard that he was supposed to be the leader of a death squad, I was thinking, like, how could this person, now, like I said, none of us were angels, you know. We did what we had to do when we had to do whatever we had to do to survive, for the most part. But to be labeled as the leader of a death squad, like, I just never would imagine Keith having that type of like hate in his heart that he would be a leader of a death squad. So my whole thought process was, how did they come to this conclusion, and what's the evidence?
In time, Desmond makes the trip to see Keith at the Ohio State Penitentiary. It will be the first time seeing each other since they were kids.
Visited someone in prison before, but never on death row. So I didn't know what it would take. And I was excited to see my old friend. I really was. And if you ever see the pictures that we took, I got back home, and I got to tell you, Leah, I was looking at the picture that I took, and I was conflicted. Because when you see it, like, if you know me, I'm a person that has, I have a big personality as far as like smiling. I smile big. I laugh loud. I laugh hard. It's just who I am. And so I'm visiting my old teammate, and I'm looking at, this is my man. This is Keith, you know? And so that's what the smile says. But the predicament is completely opposite that. And since it's completely opposite that, I'm like, damn, maybe I shouldn't have been smiling so fucking hard, you know?
Yeah.
And I was conflicted about that. I really was. And but it just shows you that that's what he brings out in me, because that's who he is to me. Even under those circumstances, my man is chained to this table. He's on death row. But when I see him, that's what comes out of me, because that's the energy I get from him. It speaks to the true nature of our relationship and who Keith is to me. You know, my dad was very fond of Keith, and I always look at my dad as a great judge of character. He used to help Keith out, unbeknownst to me, even sometimes financially, you know, give him a few dollars here or there. And but that's just how my dad is. But he wouldn't have done that for everybody or anybody. And that just speaks to how he saw Keith too. When I went to visit Keith, he had mentioned that, yeah, tell your dad I owe him, you know, X amount of dollars. Like, oh. And he said like $7.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like one of the first things he said. He's funny that way. It's tough. It is. It's really tough. The reason why it's so hard is simply because it's not that I'm saying I know what happened at the riot. It's not that I'm saying Keith is innocent or guilty of anything that he was accused of. It's so rough, Leah, because he did not get a fair trial. At the end of the day, that's all anybody could ever ask for in this judicial system is a fair trial. And because the evidence is clearly there that things were withheld, he didn't get a fair trial. That's what makes it so such a bitter pill to swallow, Leah. It really is, that they want to kill this man.
Has eaten up and spit out a lot of young and attractive guys.
This is the story of one of fashion's dark secrets.
I was overwhelmed. Like, I had never seen anything like this.
At the height of Abercrombie & Fitch's success.
This was me being carefully manipulated.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Investigating allegations that would take me into a world of money, sex, and power. This is World of Secrets. Season 1, The Abercrombie Guys.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
For Keith, 2022 and 2023 so far have been busy. Between the ongoing Freedom First concerts being performed around the world and the weekly book club sessions he runs as part of his Native Sons Literacy Project, Keith was also a guest speaker and recognized at the 8th World Congress Against the Death Penalty in Berlin. He was a featured narrator for Samora Pinder Hughes' concert at Carnegie Hall and contributed spoken word poetry for Mia Perlman's multimedia sculpture at Michigan State University.
I've spent the past 2.5 decades trying to do something purposeful with my life, not because I thought it might get me out of prison, but just because I didn't want to waste my one and only life.
But Keith says the one thing that's been missing the last several years has been a legal team actively fighting to get him back into court. And then, unbelievably, as I'm nearing the end of my research and conducting interviews, a new attorney comes on board.
My name is Keegan Steffen.
Keegan agrees to speak with me over Zoom.
I'm from Alaska originally. I moved to New York to go to undergrad. Went to undergrad for creative writing. I sort of worked as a writer, journalist for a while. Got very involved in advocacy work, ultimately focused on racial justice issues, Black Lives Matter organizations in that capacity. And doing that, decided that I wanted to go to law school. I thought that was sort of the best way I could help out.
While in law school, Keegan works with the Innocence Project. Eventually, he is hired as an associate at Beldock, Levine, and Hoffman, a civil rights boutique law firm in New York City, where he works today. The firm has handled some pretty famous cases, like the exoneration of Reuben Hurricane Carter.
Another big case that the firm handled was representing 4 of the Central Park 5, the people who were wrongfully convicted of the Central Park jogger rape case, made famous by the fact that Donald Trump took out a whole page ad in the New York Times calling for their execution. Turns out they were innocent. This firm also litigated the stop and frisk case, which was the case that ultimately held that the New York City Police Department's stop and frisk program was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause.
But it's in late 2022, while playing a pickup game of basketball, Keegan learns about Keith.
One of the people who plays is one of Keith Lamar's primary non-legal advocates, Wally White, who's himself a pretty exceptional individual, hosts a podcast about mental health issues in the Black community. Wally gave me a copy of Keith's book. I then started researching his case, read the court decisions, and, you know, just reading the state Supreme Court decision and the federal habeas decision, it was very clear to me that at minimum he did not get a fair trial, that there were tons of improprieties. And speaking with him and speaking with his advocacy team and other sort of people in the know legally in Ohio, it seems pretty clear to me that he is innocent. So I said I would be happy to help out.
To be clear, Keegan is at the very beginning of taking on Keith's case. He hasn't even received all of the files from Keith's federal defenders yet. But because this is the first time I am able to speak with an attorney who is actually representing Keith, I decide to try and get at least a few of my questions answered. Have you seen a list of what was actually turned over from the prosecution to the defense? Is there a log of what exactly was turned over?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I definitely haven't seen that. So, and as we know, that there's no DNA evidence linking Keith to any of the crimes that he was convicted of, or anyone. Like, there's no physical evidence tying any of the people who were convicted to any of the victims. I had heard somewhere along the way that when Keith and the 300 men who were out on the yard were brought inside the gym and then put in the K-block cells, that their clothes were all put in a big heap and they were eventually burned. And that's destroying evidence, right?
Yeah, it certainly doesn't seem like a proper investigation to burn a bunch of potential evidence. I've heard that story as well. And that story only mentions the clothing of the people who survived. I want to pull at that thread a little bit more. It doesn't seem out of the question to me that maybe some of the clothing of some of the victims still exists somewhere, and if it does, that should be DNA tested.
So, you know, there are at least two other guys who were beaten, basically left for dead, but survived. There was a guy named Itchy Walker, and then this guy, Andre Stockton. And I interviewed Andre Stockton. He was in a coma for 2 weeks after. I asked him what he remembered. He said that he remembers Keith being there. Why do you think, if Keith was the leader of this death squad, why would they give him a pass on Itchy Walker and Andre Stockton?
It doesn't make sense, particularly from the prosecutor's perspective. If you have two living witnesses who were victims, they could have had these people come in and testify that he was, you know, the leader of the death squad, and that would have very much tied together and supported their case. It's hard to imagine stronger evidence than that. It's definitely stronger than the, you know, people who were not involved or victims, and so that seems suspicious.
Keegan says what needs to happen now is a full reinvestigation into Keith's case, in the hopes that they will uncover some newly discovered evidence that could get them back into state court. But the voluminous file is going to take an army of people to go through it all. So Keegan is in the process of seeking the help of others, like law school clinics and large firms' pro bono departments.
How do you feel about your chances?
I and every other person remotely close to this case, including many attorneys who know about it, believe that a reinvestigation will uncover a lot of newly discovered evidence that will warrant a new trial.
And Keith's execution date is set for November 16th, 2023. There is an unofficial moratorium in the state on executions, but how does that affect you or not affect your plan? You're taking that date as a real date, right? Like, you're fighting the clock at this point.
Right. You know, what matters is what matters to Keith, and he certainly doesn't see that date as fake. I also don't really know what an unofficial moratorium is. That sounds pretty meaningless to me. So, yeah, we're acting with, you know, as much urgency as we can.
A little over a month after my interview with Keegan, a potential bombshell drops into my inbox. I am sent a 2007 affidavit written by Howard Hudson, retired staff lieutenant from the Ohio State Highway Patrol. He testified at Keith's 1995 trial that there was no physical evidence that came back linked to anybody. Well, in Mr. Hudson's affidavit, he had a bit more to say on this matter. Quote, "All physical evidence, tangible items collected during the investigation of the Lucasville disturbance, insofar as not presented as evidence in a criminal prosecution, was destroyed per the authorization of the lead prosecutor and myself." Okay, so Howard Hudson said he and the lead prosecutor, I mean, is he talking about Mark Pietmeyer? Because Pietmeyer was the lead slash special prosecutor on the Lucasville cases. Anyway, Hudson said he and the lead prosecutor gave the go-ahead to have physical evidence destroyed. Now, we don't know when or what evidence exactly was destroyed, but that seems like quite an admission. Keith never knew about the affidavit until now, but he says he's not completely surprised by it. He firmly believes there's so much more out there like it, and once Keegan and the new team take a long, hard look at his case, they will discover what is needed to get him back into court and a chance at a new trial.
That's really the final piece that I need. Somebody who prepared to do an autopsy on my case and like go through, you know how you take your car and you do the diagnostic and you can see all the things that's wrong with your car. I'm hoping that somebody is able to do that on my legal situation because, you know, that's the only way really to fix this.
It's hard to believe, but the time has come. This is our last episode. I actually didn't want to write it. I had some kind of mental block about putting an end to the season, an end to Keith's story, an end of any kind to it at all. What started as a reinvestigation morphed into something very different. Was it perfect reporting? No. How could it be? I didn't have access to the majority of the documents or certain people, like the prosecutors. But in the course of these 11 months and almost 90 hours of interviews, I've learned a lot about Lucasville, the uprising, Keith, and his case. I've also learned a lot about myself.
Yeah. So, I don't even really know how to, I'm going to start crying. I don't even really know how to ask you this because, so I'm writing the last episode. This conversation will go into the last episode, November 16th. What do you think when you think about that date approaching?
I don't think about that date a lot. I know it's there, but I don't look at it as like a destination that I will one day arrive. Look at my life as a process which requires your full attention right here in the moment. Amy was compiling some information for someone the other day and had to kind of go through all the things that we have accomplished over the past several years, and it's a lot. I told her as she was starting to share that with me, like, Amy, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know how much we've done. I'm just want to focus right here on this moment. I think if I start thinking about November 16th, somehow bleed into what I'm doing and take away from the urgency. Of course, I live with the reality that, you know, I can die tonight in my sleep. All of us can. So I don't really, you know, not putting my head in the sand. The opposite of that. I'm bringing as much as I possibly can to the moment every day that I can possibly do, ward off, justly murdered by these people. I take them at their word. The history of this country, they are fully capable of carrying, you know, execution out. So I know all those things. So there's nothing really to think about with that respect. So, you know, I'll deal with that when I get there. My focus is centered on right now. Time between now and then will move fast. Years have gone by, you know, rather quickly. So if and when that time comes and I one day find myself strapped to a gurney, it won't be because I didn't do everything in my power. So, and, you know, that's what I'm focused on, to make sure I do everything I can possibly do so when and if that time comes, I can know without a shadow of a doubt that I, Keith Lamar, have done everything to stand up and represent this one and only life that I've been given, precious life that I have, that I fought for it, that I, you know, I stood up and I, you know, represented it to the best of my ability, and all the things that Amy was trying to tell me about, those things would stand in my place, speak for me. You know, another thing, over the years, obviously there's been quite a few people, I think, I'm not sure exactly, 100 or a couple of hundred people who have been exonerated. I forget the exact number, but it's a significant amount of people who have been exonerated. I think I might one day join, you know, that list of people. But as I you know, go through my day to day, I don't necessarily think about that so much in terms of the outcome. But what I do think about is the other people who I've seen in this position and how after 30 years of wrongful conviction and everything that entails, that they are so meek and so accommodating, so forgiving people. I don't want these people to think that what they have done to me, not to mention what they intend to do, somehow okay with me, okay with Keith Lamar. It's not angry about this shit. Not just the fact that y'all have given me an execution date, but the shit, all the stuff y'all have done to me up until this point. It's the ironic thing about my situation, Leah, that I would have gotten off easier had I killed five people. That's the kind of system that we operate under. When I went back for my evidentiary hearing in 2007, Jeff Peeger was called, put on the stand. During recess, he was at the elevator bank, and some of my friends were there. And he was talking to somebody on the phone. He said, man, I can't, he looked good, man. I can't believe it, you know?
He said that?
Like, he was shocked. Like, he's handling that shit pretty good. You know, he looked good. I got to give him that. Yeah, he said something like that. And to be honest with you, so am I. So am I. That's part of the reason why I don't stop to think about it, because, you know, I just be, you know, crying all the time. I didn't know I had this in me. I didn't know it. I didn't know I was this smart. I didn't know it. I didn't know it. You know, and I would have never known it if I took that deal. I would have never found that out. Never knew how amazing this life is had I taken that deal. Had I did the thing that all of us been given to do over and over again. If you poor, you black, you know, take the easy way out. So I'm just as shocked, Mark Pietmeyer, Seth Peeger, you know what I mean? But if and when my time comes, they will know that how I feel about them in this bullshit system. I'm not going to, you know, play the meek role, you know, the forgiving slave. Won't be able to go home and put your kids in the bed because you're going to have to murder me. You're going to have to murder somebody when that day comes. That's on everything I love. On everything I love, you're going to have to murder me. You there?
Yeah, I'm still here. With Keegan and the new team, there's got to be some hope there, right?
It's a lot of hope. You know, the hope is, like I said, it's not on the outcome. It's, you know, on the things that we have done and achieved along the way. All these things provide the hope. There's reason to hope. Of course, if your house on fire, it's one thing to know that someone has called 911. It's another thing to hear the sirens. All that contributes to your hope that everything that you love, everything that you work for, everything that you are will, you know, will be saved. But it's another thing to see the hose being hooked up to the water hydrant. But then see the water coming out the hose and see the water, you know, extinguishing the fire. I hear the fire trucks coming. I know the call has been made. I can hear the fire trucks coming, but they haven't arrived here yet. So even while I'm hopeful, I'm also looking at my everything that I love burned down. I'm anxious about, you know, about the whole thing. I just say that to say that, you know, I'm in proximity to the help that I need. The help that I've been, you know, praying and hoping for so many years. But until that, you know, that hose is hooked to that hydrant and that water start issuing forth, that justice start issuing forth, you know, I'm going to try to, contain myself. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to start crying again. I mean, so, you know, this will be our official last conversation. I would hope that we could keep the conversation going. I would like to keep talking.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. I feel similar.
You have 1 minute remaining.
I would like to thank everyone who participated this season. There are too many people to name here, but thank you. And I would especially like to thank Keith. This wasn't an easy story to tell, and clearly, I couldn't have done it without you all. I am grateful for your time, candor, patience, generosity, and graciousness.
Whenever you have the time to talk again, let's talk again, you know?
I'm not saying goodbye. This is
okay.
This is until we speak again. How about that?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Till we speak again. Yeah. That sounds better. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
For updates on Keith's story, please visit at The Real Killer Podcast on Instagram. The Real Killer is a production of AYR Media and iHeartRadio, hosted by me, Leah Rothman. Executive producers Leah Rothman and Aliza Rosen for AYR Media. Written by Leah Rothman. Executive producer Paulina Williams. Senior associate producer Jill Pashesnik. Coordinators George Pham and Milena Krajewski. Editing and sound design by Cameron Taggy. Mixed and mastered by Cameron Taggy. Audio engineering by Matt Jacobson. Studio engineering by Jay Brannon. Legal counsel for AYR Media, Gianni Douglas. Executive producer for iHeartRadio, Maya Howard.
That world has eaten up and spit out a lot of young and attractive guys.
This is the story of one of fashion's dark secrets.
I was overwhelmed. Like, I had never seen anything like this.
At the height of Abercrombie & Fitch's success.
This was me being carefully manipulated.
Being lied to, tricked, and traded like a commodity.
Investigating allegations that would take me into a world of money, sex, and power. This is World of Secrets, Season 1, The Abercrombie Guys.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
What if we told you about a major breakthrough on awesome savings on all-inclusive beach vacays?
OMG, this could break the case.
Case? I'm talking about CheapCaribbean.com. It's full of hot savings. At CheapCaribbean.com, score an extra $175 off site-wide on vacations of 4 nights or more now through June 3rd. A swim-up bar in Punta Cana, or dip your toes in the sand on the shores of Cancun.
We gotta take this show on the road.
Start at CheapCaribbean.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.